Hello and welcome to today's edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dodd, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for the show. Today, we break down how Canadians are feeling about the cybersecurity situation with Stephen Cobb, senior security researcher at ESET, which has looked into just that topic, taking its first ever deep dive into how much Canadians think they know about security and how they feel about what they know. We'll talk about what Canadians are concerned about, why businesses and governments should be concerned about those worries, and how those concerns are likely to evolve over the course of 2019. We'll also talk about what Steve and his peers at ESET feel are likely to be the big security issues we face this year. It's a packed interview, so let's get right into it. My chat with Stephen Cobb. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
It's I was going to fall into the trap of saying it's been an interesting year in security, but I suppose it's always an interesting year in security. It's a field where there's never a shortage of stuff going on, is it?
Right. So I've been in it for 30 years, and every year has been interesting. So that suggests next year will be interesting as well.
One hopes, I suppose you could say. Although with security issues, you're never sure if you want things to be interesting or not.
No, I think, you know, a year when not a whole lot happened would be nice. You know, just once in 30 years to you know, not have these announcements of breaches. New form of malicious code, a new type of attack. It can get old.
Yeah, no doubt. And it would be, if nothing else, a nice change of pace, I'm sure. So as we are wont to do this time of year, we kind of look back at the year that was and look forward to the year that will be. You guys have just published some new reports, sort of addressing where we're at and where you see things going. I guess let's maybe start with what have you seen as the big trends, the big issues, the big surprises, I guess, of 2018 in the security sphere?
So something we looked at in 2018 that we hadn't really looked in detail at was how people are responding to cybersecurity and cybercrime issues. So we've had through the year a series of breaches announced, some bigger than others, some more damaging potentially than others. But we decided to look at how this is affecting people, and specifically in Canada. We did a survey, we call it the Cybersecurity Barometer, and it parallels studies that they've been doing in Europe for some time. So we ran this survey across North America, and the first analysis we did was of the Canadian responses, and we found that 9 out of 10 Canadians now identify cybercrime as a serious challenge to the country's security. And this was, I didn't expect a number that strong. You know, and what was interesting, not only was it 90%, but people thought cybercrime was a bigger threat than some other serious criminal activity like money laundering or drug trafficking. And so this really shows that the news we get, and we've been getting for the last few years certainly, has had an impact. I mean, 5 years ago, we saw the Target credit card theft break, and that was certainly, you know, a big moment in public consciousness. And yet people said, oh, well, people will forget about it. It will deal with this problem. We'll have chip cards. And certainly in the U.S., we have chip cards now, which we didn't have before. But no, I think it's cumulative. And we also saw that about 80% of Canadians that we surveyed thought the risk of cybercrime to them, the risk of becoming a victim of cybercrime, is increasing. So it wasn't like, wow, we've hit the limit here. People are worried about becoming a victim of cybercrime. And, this, I think, shows that beyond the headlines about, oh, you know, there's this vulnerability here and this breach of data there, things are having an impact. And we found that people were modifying their behavior. This So the survey questions are interesting. They come out as a set of this European model, but we ask questions like, well, what have you been doing maybe differently in the last few years because of cybercrime and, and concerns about security? And 47% that they chose to only use their own computer, only visit, 45% said they only were going to visit websites that they knew and trusted. 45% said they would give out less personal information now than they used to. Only opening emails from people I know. A lot of people had installed, obviously, antivirus software, and so on. What's concerning, I would think, to businesses and potentially the government is that 18% said they're less likely to buy goods or services online. And 14% they were less said they were less likely to bank online. Yeah, so we're reaching a point where the impact of cybercrime is potentially reducing the benefits people get from the internet if people are deciding, you know, to do less shopping online and so on. So that was all very interesting, and I think it gives us some indicators of where we can go in the future. This is quite interesting in terms of the work that you and other people do sort of talking about this problem. The extent to which people felt well-informed about cybercrime kind of varied quite a bit. 62% of people in Canada said they were either fairly well or very well-informed about cybercrime. But in the U.S., that figure was 70%. So, in both countries, there's room for improvement. People, you know, feeling somewhat well-informed. I mean, 62% is not bad, but I think there's more work to be done. And there was an interesting variation we looked at regionally. So we looked at Ontario, the Atlantic region, the Western region, Quebec, and Canada. And the people who felt well-informed tended to be, the Atlantic and the Western regions considered themselves less well-informed. And I thought that was interesting. You had the East Coast and the West Coast feeling less well-informed than the rest of the country. So there's clearly work to be done in getting out the word to people about being aware of cybercrime and the things they need to do, you know, to protect their data. But I think for companies, the message is that, you know, if we don't keep up the efforts to keep a lid on cybercrime, then it's going to impact, you know, that online economy, which is, of course, so important these days.
This is the first time you've done this type of research in North America, correct?
Yes. So we've done a couple of different surveys in the past. For example, when the Edward Snowden revelations happened, we asked about people's behavior online, and we saw people pulling back, you know, 18-20% saying, oh, I'm going to do less email now. You know, and so we've seen indications of this in the past, but the idea of this research was to model it on this barometer survey, they call it, in the EU, where every couple of years they survey 1,000 people in each of the 28 EU countries, right? And you know, actually, I think is what the government should be doing. I mean, you know, ESET is a cybersecurity company. We want to know about this, but it would be really good if the government would do this sort of research, because then, you know, people, I work for a security company, I'm telling you people are concerned about security. Some people are cynical. They go, oh, well, you would say that, right? But it's actually, you know, this is an independent survey, and it follows a model that has been used elsewhere. And yeah, this is the first time we ran it in North America. You know, if this is run next year, it will be parallel to one that's coming up in Europe. So next year, potentially, we can do a comparison across not just Canada and the U.S., but also across the EU countries. The last time they ran it in the EU was last year. And if you look at those numbers, you can see that certainly in 2018, North Americans are more concerned about cybersecurity and cybercrime than Europeans were in 2017. But, you know, there's an argument to be made there. Oh, well, it's not contemporaneous. But, yeah, I think these cybercrime statistics play a very important role. One of the fundamentals of crime fighting, if you talk to a criminologist, mm-hmm. is knowing the size of the problem. Right. So mm-hmm. the early work in early development of police forces and government response to crime in cities back in the 1700s, 1800s, really came out of statistics about, well, gosh, a lot of people seem to be having problems, or a lot of people are dying. Why are they dying? Let's add this up and find out. And then you get to see, okay, over time, more and more people are dying violent deaths. That's bad. Let's have a police force. And really that model has continued all the way through into the 20th century, where if you go to the FBI in the United States, the RCMP, or if you go to in the UK, you go to the government, you can get statistics. You can find out how many cars got stolen last year, yep. right? But you can't find out how many credit cards got compromised or how many people had their identity stolen. Not to the level of detail and the statistical rigor that we find around traditional crime statistics. Right. So we wanted to try and go for that and provide, you know, data for maybe, you know, politicians, members of parliament who are going, hey, we need more money to fight cybercrime. And somebody says, well, why? And you say, well, 9 out of 10 Canadians think it's a really big problem.
Makes sense to me. Curious to get your thoughts on sort of what you see as the big takeaways in terms of actions for ESET partners at this point in time, based on what we're talking about here. One thing that occurs to me is we talk a lot to partners about the importance of, you know, making sure they're offering that security 101 type of level of content and information to their customers, and specifically to everyone in their customers' organizations. Does the relatively high level of awareness that you see here suggest that perhaps there's room to perhaps add some more 201 type content to start building on those basic building blocks and sort of up level the conversation?
I think that's a very good idea. I do think that one of the ironies, if you've ever done surveys, is as soon as you get the results, you want to ask more questions, right? I'd really like to know how people defined well informed, because we can't define that for them in the survey. So
yeah,
I think, you know, something I've been talking about in 2018. Is the dark markets where stolen information is sold. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of where your credit card goes when it's been stolen. It goes to an online market where somebody buys it to abuse it. And when I take people on a tour of the dark web, where this happens, even people who I think would consider themselves well-informed are surprised at the level of sophistication. Right. I mean, it's basically Amazon or eBay for criminals. Yeah. I mean, you've got seller ratings, you've got product ratings, you've got five star reports, you've got specials and so on. You've got this very well developed cybercrime market, and I constantly find when I go out and talk to businesses that they're not aware that is the level of the threat, and mm-hmm. so. Where I think a lot of people now understand some of the basics of cyber hygiene, like strong passwords and you know, being careful which emails they open, I think we can potentially take it to the next level. I think a lot of people are aware of what they should be doing. They're maybe not all doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not complying with these things to the level that they should. So, yeah, for partners, I think there's no downside to providing education around cybersecurity. It's not something that is cumulative, in the sense that I've heard people say this, well, we did cybersecurity training last year. Yeah, you have to do it this year too. And it's kind of like customer service training, you know.
Yeah.
The bank has somebody who goes to all the branches of the bank and say, you have to smile when the customers come in. And like for the next few weeks, everybody smiles and it's wonderful. And then, you know, 6 months later, people are grumpy again. Mm-hmm. You have to freshen this up. And I think you can take it to the next level. You know, ESET provides free cybersecurity training resources. Mm-hmm. And they've been very popular, but we recently freshened them up. You know, we added some what's called gamification to make them more enjoyable and engaging.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
And I think, yeah, we need to build on the work that's already been done, because we, you know, if you look ahead to 2019, we're not seeing any downward trends. You know, we're looking at cybercrime, unfortunately, you know, growing stronger. Mm-hmm. And we need to be aware of that.
All right. You touched on a couple areas of concern, you know, specifically around privacy and a couple of other things in the course of the conversation. But, you know, what would you call the top one or two issues or trends that you saw emerge or shape sort of the security game in 2018?
So something that sounds very technical, but is definitely a trend, is the rise of coin miners.
Right.
And cryptocurrency problems in general. So this cryptocurrencies are things like Bitcoin and Monero or Ethereum. And basically criminals are targeting every aspect of that, because obviously, you know, certainly at the start of 2018, Bitcoin was riding high, its value was way up. And it's still worth a fair amount. And so we see a lot of scams around that. But this coin mining is a specific problem where bad actors want to take over your computing systems to generate cryptocurrency for themselves. You know, as many people know, cryptocurrency is actually created through computer calculations. And those consume electricity and they consume CPU cycles. So rather than pay for your own electricity as a criminal to generate currency, why not compromise other people's machines and use them? And so we're seeing malicious code that once was used maybe to build a botnet for spamming now being used for coin mining. There's an interesting aspect to that psychologically, where I've heard some people ask, well, what's the problem? You know, coin mining, they're not stealing my information.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things. The first one being, it's a criminal using your computer, and that's not good. And the second point is, because they'll probably do other things. You know, so we're seeing already, you know, that push to get my criminal code on somebody's system being then diversified into, well, you know what? This coin mining's not working so well. How about I use this system for something else? Maybe I'll steal all the information on it. Maybe I'll ransom the files on it for Bitcoin. So, you know, there's, I think, diversification is something and to be aware of, you know, moving forward. One of the things that, to your point about maybe taking that security education to a higher level, is explaining to people that malicious code is pretty much a business, and it runs on a business model, even in the way it's built. So it's very modular, and there are specialists working on each part of that. So the piece of code or the process by which malicious code gets onto a computer, whether it's a consumer's computer or a server in an office, that dropper, that process is handled by somebody who's really good at writing the code for that. But then somebody else may write maybe the phishing emails that trick people into clicking on a file that's infected. And then there are other people who write modules for denial of service attacks, for spamming, for crypto mining, for ransomware, and so on. So the spread of malicious code onto systems is just bad. And whether it's being used for one crime or another, it's bad. And so, you know, there's no point at which you go, well, you know what, that's not a particularly bad thing they're doing to my computer. Because tomorrow it may be a really bad thing if somebody's into your systems without authorization.
All right, great. Looking ahead a bit, what do you see as the potential? And this is granted, I'm asking you to crystal ball a little bit here. But what do you see as the potential defining trends of 2019? Or perhaps better put, what are you keeping your eye on as the emergent trends for 2019?
Well, I'm very lucky in that regard because I work with a team of researchers who are very, very clever, some much cleverer than I am. And each year we ask them what they see as the major problems. And we go through this process where we produce a report. Actually, it's just been published, Cybersecurity Trends 2019. And we try to refine it down because there's a lot of things happening. Coin miners are definitely on that list. Then a trend we see is around machine learning, where we've seen in 2018 this continued enthusiasm for the use of machine learning and artificial intelligence. And we won't get into arguing whether it is machine learning or artificial intelligence, but by using that computational capability to fight cybercrime. But there's also the potential it will be abused. And so I think I'm looking in 2019 for examples of machine learning used to, for example, improve the efficiency of a phishing campaign.
Right.
To improve the efficiency with which brute force password attacks are carried out and so on. Another trend I think is going to be big is around privacy. And we see that the EU started to enforce May 25th of 2018 the General Data Protection Rule. Mm-hmm. And I've already heard people actually saying, "Oh, GDPR, the Global Data Protection Rule." And it's not the global, but in a way it is, because
yes,
we've already got legislation now in California. In California's, I think, the sixth largest economy in the world. Mm-hmm. It has the Consumer Privacy Protection Act here, which the CCPA, which is very much modeled on the GDPR. And so we also see big North American companies getting investigated by the countries in the EU under GDPR. We'll see some big fines, I think, in 2019 around breaches which fall under GDPR. Already, when the Marriott Starwood breach was announced, immediately people were going, "Will this be under GDPR or not?" I think it probably will. And so I think that reluctance, which I totally understand, of companies in North America going, that's the European Union, and I'm not going to worry too much about GDPR. You have to worry about the way that you're handling personal information, the compromise of which could be embarrassing, because there's no way, I think, the argument will go, "That's Europe. They get more privacy because they're European. This is North America. You don't get so much privacy, right?" Yeah. For example, if you're Facebook, how do you say, "Well, our European Facebook users have this level of protection, and we have this other smaller level, lower level of protection for our North American"? No, I think the trend we've seen, Canada has been a leader in privacy for a long time. Mm-hmm. We see recently Brazil announced that it had a new set of privacy regulations. I mean, that's a very large economy that follow GDPR. Japan, I think the key thing for a company, and certainly for partners who are selling cybersecurity solutions, there's a lot of potential there to open the door through discussion of things like encryption, which mm-hmm. can help you withstand investigation and or criticism around these things, beefing up your data protection, your protection on your servers and so on, to avoid any of these issues, but also looking at how you architect your data storage so that if somebody sends you a message saying, "I would like to exercise my right to delete all my information," you know where it all is, and you can do that, and you can comply with those sorts of things. And then I think, I don't know if it's a lighter note, but around home appliances, as in digital home assistants, Things like smart speakers, smart doorbells, smart cameras, smart thermostats, that whole Internet of Things in the home, I think, will be under attack in 2019. We've already seen examples where bad actors can build a botnet of very simple devices, which nevertheless, when they're organized and abused, can carry out a denial of service attack on a pretty large scale. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a bad actor, there's a number of reasons why I would like to get my code into certainly your home router. So we saw some home router attacks in 2018. I think we'll see more of that in 2019, because your home router is on the internet all the time. It's a great place to store some malicious code, either to carry out things like denial of service attacks or to get into the home and compromise information that's on home systems. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that same thing goes to small businesses, small offices, professional offices, and so on.
All right. Great. And maybe just to wrap it up, if you had sort of one piece of advice for security-focused solution providers in 2019, what would it be?
I think stay on that track. I think the factors that are coming together with the constant expansion of the attack surface and the lack so far of a solid, effective government response to crack down on cybercrime means that both security services, security products, and security training are all going to be needed in 2019 and until there's a turning of the tide. And it can happen. You know, there are less cars stolen today than there were 10 years ago. Right. So maybe the cybercrime will get turned down a little bit, but I don't see that happening in 2019.
All right. Great. Appreciate the time so much.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
So there you have it, how Canadians are feeling about cybersecurity with ESET's Stephen Cobb. I'd like to thank Stephen for taking the time to drop some knowledge on us, thank ESET Canada for its continuing support of the site, and of course, thank you for listening. We couldn't do this without you. The ChannelBuzz.ca podcast will be back on Thursday as the New Year's podcast series continues with a conversation with Ed Galasso, General Manager of Tech Data Canada. We'll talk about Tech Data's 2018 highlights in this country, the growth of the cloud and hybrid markets, the integration of its Avnet technology solutions, how solution providers are feeling about their business at the dawn of 2019, and where the distributor will place its bets for this year. But until then, I'm Robert Dutt for ChannelBuzz.ca, and I'll see you around the channel.